Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me is Matt Smith. In the 11th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, I'll ask Mac to break down the come-from-behind 4-2 victory for Fulham against Reading on Saturday. Before we get started, I also have to welcome my Cottage Talk host back to the show. This is the 11th edition of the show, Matt. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, Russ. It's good to be back, especially after the weekend that we had as a club. It's definitely a fun one to be on, and looking forward to it.
Listen, I'm looking forward to your analysis of this match. And, again, I just want to just say, again, to the Fulham supporters who've been asking me, we've had technical difficulties with blogtalkradio.com for about a week now. We're hoping that, again, we're past it. But, again, that's the reason why we did not have a pre- or post-match show. So again, me and you doing this today, Matt, this will be our view of the Reading match. And I know many fans want some talk on it, so that's what we're going to do today, my friend.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, it seems like I guess our show was probably the last one that's been out, so I guess we broke it. So hopefully we'll fix it by doing this.
Hopefully. All right. Without further ado, let's now talk about this victory for Fulham. Huge victory. Again, the way I look at it, Matt, before I go to you, 6 minutes when Fulham scored 3 goals, again, those 6 minutes changed the season, maybe changed the fate of Kit Simons, who knows? But again, a tremendous come-from-behind victory for Fulham. Just share with me your overall thoughts on the match.
I thought it was probably, arguably, our best 90 minutes of the season. I mean, I know that QPR is an easy one to point to, you know, considering it was 4-0 instead of 4-2, like this scoreline was. But I thought our overall play was just excellent. I thought that we kept the ball well. We moved it. We were very, very compact defensively. And, you know, we defended as a team and then counterattacked very well, and it flowed. And I think that, you know, over time, you actually, it just started to break down Reading. And Reading are a very good team and playing pretty well. So, you know, you wonder if, because you see the potential. I think that's probably one of the frustrating things, is that you see the potential in this team, you know, every other week, every 2 weeks, whatever. But, you know, with the grind that this league is, if you only see it every other week, you're going to be mid-table, maybe top 10, not really pushing for the playoffs. So that, I think we just need to find some way to grab this consistency. It seems like at halftime that maybe Kit or some of the players have just kind of had enough of it and been frustrated with the either the play or the breaks or the luck that we're getting or whatever, and finally somebody or something lit a fire underneath our players, because just the way that we attacked all throughout the second half was excellent. But you know, the two goals that we gave up, one, to be quite honest with you, the first one was just really good football from Reading. I mean, sometimes it's not you defending well. It's the other team just being a touch better. Their first goal was very, very nice. The second goal, just a bit unlucky. I know I've heard some people get on Tim Ream, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I don't really fault him for that. I think it's on Kearney and Orlando Saw. Took his chance and took it well, and it was just kind of one of those things—a bad break. But we responded really well, and I think we've made it known to our former players that if you score against us, you better not celebrate, because it tends to not work out too well after that for our former players doing that against us. So, it was a great result, and just a great response, and from what I thought was a great 90 minutes overall.
Well, that's great. And listen, what I'd like to do before you go down and break down the positions with all the players, I want to read something to you. Again, these are quotes from Ross McCormack that actually you can read on the Fulham website with an article that they posted a few days ago, called McCormack, Great Belief. And I want to get your thoughts on it, because, again, you were talking about halftime. And, again, some of these quotes are gonna really talk a little bit about that. So, again, these are quotes from Ross McCormack. Quote, first half wasn't good enough. They showed they were a good team, and we were probably gave them too much respect, said McCormack. We sat off. The gaffer told us in no uncertain terms at the break that it wasn't good enough. We needed to get after them and put them under pressure, get in their face. Second half, that was more like us, and that's what we can do to anyone. It's easy for everyone to say, why can't we do that all the time? But we're a new team, and we're still getting to know each other. But if we can produce performances like we did in the last 40 minutes on Saturday, I dare say we'll win every game. We can take a huge amount of belief from the last 40 minutes. If we put a 90 minutes together like that, it will be unlucky for someone. Okay, so those are the quotes from Ross McCormack. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, I mean, I agree in the fact that if we can play like that over a course of 90 minutes, then we're going to be very, very difficult to beat. But you know, I didn't necessarily see us play incredibly poorly. I do agree that we were sitting off and we were kind of giving them a little bit too much time in areas of the field and things like that. But I'm with him, and it's good to see. I mean, just in reading that, you can just kind of, you can feel the fire and, you know, the kind of the intensity in his comments and that, you know, I think that, yeah, the excuse, you know, the reasoning of them being a new team and things like that has been, you know, you can't say it's not a valid one because there are a lot of new pieces, but, when you see performances like that, you know, the obvious question is why can't that happen all the time? And I think that hopefully the consistency will grow as long as that fire just stays lit. I think that probably some of the downfall of the club has been, you know, we'll have a great performance, and it seems like everybody, fans included, kind of goes, okay, all right, we're going to be fine. That's everybody relax or whatever. But really, there's no time to relax. Every game is an important one from here on out, and you know, you can't say every game's a must win, but you know, we've got to get as many points as we can, as quickly as we can, and to go on a run is going to take consistent intensity day in, day out, at training and in games. And so, there's definitely no time to relax. So hopefully that fire for Ross can stay lit and light it for some other players so we can kind of move forward. But I agree, the way that we physically played the game in the last 40 to 45 minutes was absolutely fantastic. And there's some players that I'll point out as we go through that were the epitome of that. But I think that we showed a lot of moxie and a lot of bottle to really answer the bell in terms of physicality in the match, and I think that went a long way to helping us win.
Okay, fantastic. And the one thing I want to mention before we go down and break down the players, and we will be talking about Ross McCormack when we talk about the strikers. For me, he actually showed that intensity, like you mentioned, Matt, when he scored that goal. You could see that. Again, I've watched the replay. I saw the highlights. And I think that's significant because, again, listen, I've been critical at him at times, Ross McCormack, with some of his play, but I did see that intensity and that desire, and that goal just changed everything. And again, I thought Fulham were playing pretty well at the end of the first half and going into the second half, but again, you go down two goals, and then he scores that goal, and everything flips on its side at that point, and then we go through that six-minute span of scoring three goals. It all started with that first goal from Ross McCormack, and he was all fired up. So, again, that's a positive sign. All right, Matt, let's now go and let's break down all the positions. Let's start with a goalkeeper. Let's talk about Joe Lewis in this match.
I thought it was good. I didn't think he's definitely not at fault for either goal. It's the first goal, the guy's in free on goal from just a good passage of play and just tucks it away in the corner, and then Orlando Salas was right inside the post, and so – you know, with Ream in his face and everything, so I don't really think that you can really fault him for the two goals. I thought that there was a corner in the second half that he severely misplayed, that the one that Fredericks had to save off the line. Just his body positioning wasn't great. He was a little bit too square to the ball as compared to shaping his body a little bit more towards the field so that he could move a little bit better laterally. Instead, with him being looking straight at the ball and his shoulders were square to the ball, he basically had to backpedal as he was going to come out for that ball instead of being able to move laterally, which you're obviously a little bit quicker at. So really that's the only thing that I can point out. Other than that, I thought he did well. I thought that he controlled our box. There was maybe another time he could have come for a ball off of a free kick that they played to the back post and headed back across, but we handled it pretty well. And I thought he commanded our center backs pretty well, and they did a good job. And I thought overall, you know, he had a solid match. Definitely not at fault for the two goals. And, other than that, I thought was very good. And maybe even, you know, arguably could have had kind of a second assist on Moose's goal.
I hear you on that one. Oh, well, let me ask you this before we move on from Joe Lewis. Does Kit now have options for the number one goalkeeper? Is there a little bit of a battle that could be going on? I know Lewis has only featured twice now in league matches, but does Kit now have a choice between Andy Lonergan and Joe Lewis?
I think he does. I mean, I think if Lonergan comes back, and I think he's probably still going to be the number one. I don't think necessarily that Lewis has done necessarily enough to remove Lonergan from the number one spot, but it's very, very close. And, you know, really what he has now is he has peace of mind about the goalkeeping position. Is he has, you know, when Lonergan gets back healthy, which he was on the bench, so I assume that he's you know, getting back to fitness, because I'm not sure why you would put an unfit goalkeeper on the bench. But, you know, I think what he's probably doing is he's probably riding the confidence of a goalkeeper who's playing well, which is why Lonergan was on the bench. But I still think that Lonergan will end up winning the job back. But at the end of the day, it's a situation where, as a manager, if, you know, your goalkeeping position is so, so important, you know, to have goalkeepers, more than one goalkeeper that can really play the position effectively and your team can have confidence in, is really a feather in your cap, because, you know, one goes down, you know, you don't see any players' heads drop. You know, they're like, hey, we're going to be okay. The other one's coming in, we'll be just fine. So it's definitely, you know, more than a problem. It's more of just peace of mind. And yeah, it is a problem in terms of you got to pick one, but I hardly call that a problem.
I call that a good thing, honestly, when you have options like that. And, of course, with the situation with Marcus Bettinelli, it's good to know that you have a choice. You know, again, I agree with you. I think Andy Lonergan would be a starting goalkeeper, but I don't think that there's this huge drop-off if you go to Joe Lewis, which is a very good thing, Matt. All right, let's move on. Let's now talk about the play of the fullbacks in this match. There are actually three of them because Jazz Richard went off injured in the first half, so let's talk about him, let's talk about James Husband, and then let's talk about Ryan Fredericks, who then, when Jazz Richards went off, then played right back. So talk about the play of all three of them.
Well, I thought Jazz Richards was actually playing okay, and I thought he was getting forward before he got hurt. I thought that, you know, that really the injury came from him getting forward and being dangerous on the attack. You know, I thought that he did... you know, that he was doing pretty well, and it was a shame to see him go out, especially to have Fredericks have to drop back from the midfield position where he was, you know, being pretty effective and could have been effective, seeing as how the outside back did already have a yellow card. And so, you know, we were kind of like, okay, now that fullback has a yellow card, now Fredericks going to be able to run at him with pace and maybe something can happen here. So, you know, you hated to see that, but when he moved back, it was just more of the same from Frederick. It was fantastic. I thought that he definitely stayed involved in the play, and he was able to press higher up the field because he can recover faster if they do get in behind us. And, you know, really, once, you know, when a lot of times you worry about the early balls over the top and things like that, but you never do with Frederick. So you're not really worried about him being able to defend those and get back on those. But really, the key player from the fullbacks for me was James Husband. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. I think that on the first goal, you could probably fault him a little bit because if you watch the replay back, he steps in to try to win a ball at the attacking midfield position for us, kind of off the counterattack, and they get the ball wide, and then they play the ball in, and they have that nice passage to play to get the goal. So you might be able to fault him for that, just being and really all you would fault him for is being over-aggressive. And at the end of the day, as a manager, if you're going to the way I talk to my fullbacks is, if you're going to make a mistake, make an aggressive mistake and make it high up the field so we at least have a chance to recover. And so that's really what he did. And honestly, if that's what I'm criticizing for, then that there was a lot worse things to be able to say about him. But I thought in the second half that he really led the charge physically, especially at the end of the game when Reading were getting chippy. He definitely did not back down. And, you know, I completely agree with – I was watching the second half again today, and I completely agree with what Sean Davis was saying, was that he was playing like he was trying to send a message to Kit that, you know, hey, you know, don't drop me again. You know, I'm trying to keep the shirt and things like that. And I think it's a great way for everybody to play. I think if you can get 11 players that are playing week in, week out to you know, to try to earn their spot for the next week, you know, and try to prove a point to the manager, then you're going to get some inspired performances. And I thought James Husband was – I thought he was fantastic. I do. I mean, you know, like I said, you could probably fault him for the first goal, maybe a little bit, but you know, or at least allowing the counterattack. But you know, I thought that he really stepped up physically and almost led the charge, and really it was a pretty inspirational performance physically in the second half.
Okay, very good. And listen, I think competition is great. Like you said, you might get even better performances out of players, you know, if they're feeling that they need to really show the manager exactly what they're about if they want to keep their spot, as we would say, like in other sports. You know, again, I think it's a very good thing. And James Husband, like you mentioned, played very well in this match. All right, let's now talk about the center backs in this game. Let's talk about Richard Stearman and Tim Ream. I know that you mentioned you would be talking about the goal that second goal that Tim Ream was involved in. Unfortunately, Joe Louis gave up that second goal, but Tim Ream was defending on Orlando Saw. But I want your overall assessment of the two of them, and then really want you to go into a little bit of talk about that second goal there, Matt.
Well, I thought the two center backs were very, very good. I thought that Ream is just so calm on the ball, almost to the point where it gives you a heart attack. Because, you know, he, even under pressure, he can play out of it and be crafty and shift his body and get us out of it. And so he was very good. I think that a big thing of what you're seeing our center backs do, which is something that's very, very positive for us, is when they engage defensively, they are now staying engaged. So I saw, for instance, in the second half, Stearman is steps to a ball, and the player actually goes wide with it. Instead of him passing it on and there being a period of time where there's no pressure on the ball, he actually stays with it across, and I believe it was Fredericks over there on the right, kind of tucks in behind him. And what that's going to do is it's really going to help us, avoid the situations of either miscommunication or being confused or anything like that. It was a very confident decision from Richard Stearman to really stay tight, really not leave the player, not pass him on, take that personal responsibility on. And, you know, maybe that's the way that we're going to defend wide spaces now, is that if a player picks the ball up and goes wide and carries it wide, that we just stay on it and so we can deny crosses and things like that. And so it was very interesting to see that change, that our center backs are willing to not only engage but stay engaged as compared to pass players on. So I think that could be something to look for and see if that's maybe just a total change of the way that we're defending, and seeing if that's effective. But, I thought that they were both very, very good. I thought Stearman was fantastic in the air. Ream had some big wins in the air. So they were decisive. They were confident. They were positive. They really closed down the space in front of them a lot, with maybe the exception of one or two times, after we scored the fourth goal. I thought that they commanded the back very, very well. In terms of the second goal, the reason that I don't think that you can really fault Ream, I think that Ream has a lot of confidence in Kearney, and I think that what he was doing is he was transitioning into attacking position, which is why they were that wide. I don't necessarily think that he got caught sleeping or whatever. I think that he was just expecting Kearney, I think as most of us did, to be able to bring that ball down and play him or turn with it or whatever. I think that's something that Kearney does pretty well and is pretty competent at, and I think that he just had a lapse of mind there and lost the ball. But I thought that Ream actually did a good job of actually stepping to the ball and showing him wide and showing Saw wide. And Saw just made a good shot and, tucked it in the side corner. I mean, I guess, a lot of people were saying, he's got to be closer there or whatever. But I kind of disagree on that. He was expecting him to be able to win the ball and bring it down nicely. And, sometimes that happens. I mean, you wonder why fullbacks play or why center backs can play so wide in possession. It's because they have confidence in the people around them that they're going to be able to keep the ball, and they don't need to be tight all the time and in defensive shape. And I think that's what Ream was doing.
Okay, very good. All right. Let's move on to the midfield. I'm really curious your thoughts on the players here. Again, we're talking about Ryan Tunnicliffe, Tom Kearney, LVC. Can also mention Ryan Fredericks because he did play the majority of the first half in midfield. And then, of course, Kaká comes on. So share with me your thoughts on the play of the midfield.
Well, I thought it was interesting, an interesting lineup. Obviously, with O'Hara being out, was a big miss, or at least we thought it was going to be a big miss. So, I felt like we almost played with two defensive center mids, with Ross playing underneath Musa. But they defended well as a unit, and you know, they did stay a little bit wider. I think Kearney looked fantastic in the middle of the field, actually. You know, he's been playing wide for us and cuts inside. I think that he, you know, I think that he now, you know, playing in the midfield, playing the center midfield role, I think was quite good. You know, from an attacking point of view, were they excellent in the middle? No, not really. They weren't horrible, but definitely nothing that, you know, you could definitely tell that we were missing O'Hara in that way. But you know, then out wide, I thought we did a good job. I thought, you know, when Fredericks was in, he was really running at their backs and things like that. And I think Kaka, you know, does have the tendency to run inside some, but I thought he did a good job of keeping his width, you know, to really try to stretch their defense and things like that. And I thought that, you know, on the counterattack, I thought we were very, very good. You know, we were very flowing through the counterattack, found our forwards early and were able to work off them. And, you know, so overall, I thought that they were very, very good, especially defensively in the middle and then on the counterattack out wide.
Okay, very good. And let's drill down a little bit deeper about the loss of Jamie O'Hara. I thought it was very noticeable in the first half. What did Kearney do in the second half that kind of mitigated the loss of O'Hara?
Well, it's you know, they're just different players in terms of their range of passes. You know,
okay.
O'Hara is one who loves to pick a long switching ball out or a long ball into the channel or whatever. Kearney is a little bit more you know, short passing game, kind of a, I don't know if I want to go this far, but a Barcelona-ish type style of player where, you know, loves the short passes and then tries to break down defenses that way and is very athletic and very, you know, and very flashy and can run at people and things like that when he gets chances. But, you know, I think where it helped is that I think just the youth and the exuberance of the center midfield and our ability to maybe counterattack a little bit faster just because of the upswing in athleticism that Kearney gave us. But I think part of where we missed O'Hara, especially in the first half, was the fact that we didn't have anybody to get in there and really just settle us down at times and really to give us a purpose going forward. I felt like we had good possession in the first half. I felt like there wasn't a whole lot of purpose to it. I felt like it was keeping the ball to keep the ball. Yeah, we'll try to get a chance here and a chance there, and you know, we'll build the ball up and things like that. So there wasn't a whole lot of – there was a lot more purpose in the second half because of the – but we changed the style of play. So we changed from – hey, we're going to keep the ball and build it, to hey, we're going to be a little bit tighter defensively. We're going to catch him on the counter. We're going to run on the counterattack, and we're going to do it very, very fast, and really put him under pressure. And you know, then if we lose the ball, then we're going to try to win it further upfield and things like that. So, you know, I think that's really the big miss that we had. And you know, it shows that we have options in the middle of the field too, and can play different styles and things like that. So, but you know, it's always a pro and con. You know, I think we definitely missed O'Hara, you know, would he have been as effective in the style that we were getting forward in the second half? I'm not really sure. I think Kearney may have been the perfect fit for that.
Interesting. I'm really appreciate how you broke that down about the speed of the pace. You know, the passing ability of Kearney, those short passes in the second half, and really pushing forward more in the second half compared to what was going on in the first half, where Reading were dictating more of the play, and in the second half it was really all Fulham. Very, very interesting analysis there, Matt. All right, I'm really curious your thoughts about our strikers up front. They were Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele. How did they fare?
Well, you have to say that they were pretty good. You know, you can't. It's hard to pick apart a lot of what they did. You know, in the first half, I think they were just kind of trying to find their way. I think that Ross was I think it was pretty clear the way they were playing. It was that you know, Moussa was kind of the target and playing off the shoulder of the center back, and Ross was the one that was going to kind of show from channel to channel on either side to really try to be the workhorse underneath to try to get the ball forward. But you know, with Moussa having two goals and assists, I thought he was fantastic. I thought that, you know, his interchange play with McCormack and his combination play with him was fantastic. I mean,
Was it his first goal or was it his second goal that was the combination?
It was the second goal. The second goal that was the combination with Ross was just top class. I mean, that's just something that that we love to see. Just the skill from those two is fantastic, but he also showed that he could score different kind of goals. I mean, the goal that he scored, his first goal was just kind of a gritty one, getting into the box and putting your body on the line and sliding in for it, things like that. So it's always good to see kind of the process and the evolution of a young striker, and he's definitely flying high right now, and hopefully we can see a lot more of that. And with Ross, he was, a goal and an assist. I don't think you can really fault him for a lot. I think that he came back deep to get the ball when he needed to. He defended like he needed to. I thought they both pressured very intelligently, and were able to be very, very dangerous. And just, I mean, that, his assist to Musa was absolutely fantastic. And it's things that we know that Ross can do when he's full of confidence. And really, the goal that he scored is what you would really call a captain's goal. I mean, it was kind of made out of nothing. It was kind of a hodgepodge in the middle of the field, ball kind of getting battered around, things like that. It comes to him, he takes a little dink and rips a volley on the turn, which is actually very difficult to do. It actually, he made it look a lot easier than it really is, to be able to put it in the side, in the corner there. And that's a captain's goal, because that's what we needed. We needed a response right after that second goal. I think it's something that has been frustrating to fans that, we go down 2-0 and all of a sudden, basically the game's over. You may as well blow the final whistle. But as a captain, he brought us back into it, and you could see his fire, like you said earlier. You could see his fire after he scored the goal, and I think that led us on and spurred us on, because he it seemed like he wouldn't let us quit. And I think the players responded to that really well.
I totally agree with that. And listen, focusing on Ross McCormack again, one thing that our Cutter Star co-host Emilio Dinello pointed out to me, he was messaging me during the match, a couple of changes. We're going to talk about one of them later. It's Cock in the second half. But also that McCormack was playing deeper in the second half than he was in the first half. How much of an impact was that in this match, Matt, that he was playing deeper?
Well, I think it helped us counterattacking-wise because he was easier to find. He was playing between the midfield and the in between Reading's midfield and backs. So he was sitting in that little space in between. So I think he found it easier to find the ball and for us to find him. And then he's – honestly, when he's a terror, as we're coming forward, if he's running at you and running towards goal, either with or without the ball, then he's a really hard one to deal with. And so when he gets himself in those positions, he's got to find that line. Right, he can't be too deep to where he's truly a midfielder, but he can't be too high. I think if he finds that happy medium, and I think he certainly did in the second half, where he can help the midfield defensively, but he can also find the ball easily on the counterattack and really be able to run at players is really, I think, really important for us attacking wise.
I'm glad that you really broke it down that way, because I was thinking we've talked about it on this show that sometimes he's too deep. You're talking about finding that sweet spot, that happy medium. If he finds the happy medium, he can really be effective.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, it's there's definitely a kind of just a spot in the field. It's just a natural spot in the field, right behind the defensive center mids for the opposing team, and in front of the center backs, to where there's 15 to 20 yards of space that if you can get into those pockets and find the ball, then you're making defenders make decisions. Do center backs step out, or do they wait for defensive center mids to retreat? If they wait for defensive center mids to retreat, then he drives and they don't catch him, and then you're in trouble. If center backs step, then you're opening up space behind the center backs, and you can combine to get behind him and things like that. And so that's where it's just such a hard thing to handle when you can find that space.
Okay, very good there, Matt. Very interesting take on all these positions and all the players. I really have enjoyed how you really analyzed this match so far. All right, let's now move on to coaching situations. And let's start here. In the latter stages of the first half, fullback Jazz Richards came off with an injury, and Ryan Fredericks moved back from the midfield to take the place of Richards as a fullback. Alex Kakaniklic came on as a substitute and slotted in at that midfield position that Fredericks played prior. What do you make of these moves by the Fulham manager at this point of the match?
Well, I think it is a natural change. I don't think that there was necessarily anybody on the bench who would give us a better option. It was good to see Kaká get back in. I think that he brings some things that that can kind of change things for us. I think what Kit did is he said, okay, we're having success kind of running at this outside back with pace. You know, who is another option with pace there? And so, you know, if you have somebody like Fredericks and then you put somebody like Kaká in front of him, no matter which one runs at him, they're going to have pace. And so I think it was, I mean, I think it was a natural move, but I think it was definitely a positive move that, you know, Fredericks likes to get forward. Kaká, you know, will run at people and get inside and you know, things like that. So, you know, I think that it was an easy switch to make because of those two things, because it was a natural move because Fredericks is very, you know, still very comfortable at right back. But also to bring Kaká in and just put speed in front of speed. And when you have two players like that on that side, you know, it's going to be a handful. So, I was completely fine with it. It's probably the move that I would have made.
Now, let me ask you this, because again, after that move was made, I noticed a change in form. I know what we're focusing on the second half, but did you notice that Fulham were, I guess you could say, more aggressive later in the later stages of the first half?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think it necessarily had anything to do with Richards going off. I think it was just the pick up of athleticism. And I think that, you know, Kaká is really working to win a spot. And I think similar to what we were talking about with James Husbands, I think Kaká has kind of a chip on his shoulder right now, and you know, I think that it definitely showed by his inspired performance, and he played very, very hard. And I think that you know, you see it in some other sports a lot more, just because they have more substitutions. But sometimes you need just that little spark to come off the bench to really get across kind of what the manager's saying, or to say, hey, this is what we need to change, and you know, just to have that little spark off the bench. Now, obviously, you would never want that to happen because of an injury, but you know maybe it was a blessing in disguise, and you know, the fact that he added that spark and we you know, were able to kind of follow his lead in terms of you know, pressing higher up the field, being more aggressive, and you know, being a little bit more assertive on the counterattack.
Right, and that was one of the things that I noticed, Matt. Again, we were more aggressive, and I like how you mentioned more athletic on that side. And again, things are going to change in the second half. We're going to talk about that in a little bit when Kaká flips over to the other side. But at that time of the match, I noticed a change. And like you said, you don't want to see a change come, you know, from an unfortunate situation with a player coming off. But there was a change with how Fulham played because of Kaká coming on, what he offered. So I'm glad that you really broke that down. All right, let's go back to that article that I read at the beginning of the show from the Fulham website with quotes from Ross McCormack, because in that article he mentions that Kit made it clear at halftime that their play was not good enough against Reading. How much can a manager change the mentality of his team by what he says at halftime?
The way that I kind of put it is a manager can change the mentality at halftime, because you only have 15 to 20 minutes to really do it. You can really only change the mentality about 5 to 10%. The other 90% has to come from your leaders. And what they have to do is they have to buy into what you're saying. And so, you know, for instance, I've done things I've pulled my captains out before I go in and talk to the whole team and say, hey, listen, I'm about to rip into you a little bit. I need you to kind of reinforce what I say after I leave. And so, you know, I don't know if anything like that was said, but, you know, I think clearly the leaders on the team, Ross, Scott Parker, and those guys, you know, definitely kind of echoed what the manager was saying. I think when you have leaders that not necessarily go against what the manager is saying, but don't echo what the manager is saying, then it can be, you know, the punches won't land as hard, in terms of changing mentality. But when you have players, not just your leaders, but just people, everybody in general, that will really echo what the manager is saying, those punches are going to land a little bit harder in terms of what you're trying to get across to the team. And so, you know, as a manager, like I said, you can probably change it about 10%. The other 90% have to come from your leaders and your senior players.
See, I totally agree with that analysis. And what's interesting, because this goes back to the article, Matt, it sounds like to me, based on the quotes from Ross McCormack, he bought in. He bought in, and then, but then it's up to him and the other players to take that situation and transfer it to the field and then affect the game. So am I wrong to think that Ross McCormack bought what Kit probably said at halftime?
Yeah, no, I do, and I don't know if anything was said before that, as they were walking into the changing room or anything like that. But clearly, what Kit said, Ross definitely agreed with, and I understand that that Scott Parker was on the bench trying to make corrections, and he was buying into everything, and I think that hopefully what you saw is you saw the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of, us finally getting frustrated enough to really do something about it. That's one thing for things to go badly and to blame the manager and things like that. But at some point, it's going to be a lot more effective if finally the players can get frustrated to the point enough to where they say, hey, finally, guys, he's right. This is not good enough, and we're not representing ourselves well enough. And I think that's possibly what something to that effect, I think, is probably what went on.
Okay, very good. Listen, we're not there. We don't know what was said. But again, I'm just, I'm trying to read a little bit between the lines based on the quotes from Ross McCormack and how they responded, and especially how McCormack responded. The fiery attitude after he scored the goal. Again, something was lit underneath him. And, again, I don't have proof because I obviously have not talked to McCormack. Based on the quotes, Kit made it clear that he was not happy. So something, I feel something got through to him, and then he took it from there. And that's what you want. You want your players to take personal responsibility. I think that's what happened in the second half, Matt. All right, let's move on. This is a big coaching situation that I want clarification for you on. I really want to know how much this move affected the match. I personally think it affected a great deal, but I'm curious how you feel. At the beginning of the second half, Kaká moved to the left and LVC came over to the right. How much of this impact changed how Fulham played?
I think it was huge. I actually expected it to happen when Kaká came on, to be honest with you. I actually expected LVC to slide over to the right as Kaká came on and played on the left in the first half. So I was actually a little bit surprised that it didn't happen right when he came on. I was very glad to see that it happened in the second half, and I think it showed, on Kaká's goal, it was just a flowing play from him coming inside on the counterattack, and with a good finish with his non-dominant foot, which was great. And I think it just made us more effective, and it gave us more width. I think when you play a player, on their, like Kaká on his weak side, the natural thing is going to be for him to want to cut in. That's just going to kind of that's going to typically happen. And, then when you do it, when you do it with two players, then yeah, you're going to be a lot more narrow. So, playing players on their strong sides, is always going to keep you more width, because that's kind of where they want to go, to the outside foot. And, it definitely spread us out and helped us counterattack, because when we did counterattack, we actually did counterattack very narrow. But it came from a wide spot. So if you can envision starting wide, almost like an accordion, starting wide, and then when the ball went down the center on the counterattack, then we made our runs inside from wide, and then we were a lot more effective. So that's what, if you start inside and stay inside, it's very easy to defend. But if you can start out wide and then make your runs inside, it's a lot harder to defend, a lot harder to track. So I thought that was a very, very big an important move by Kit to really get them on the sides where they're going to be on their strong foot. And I think it showed that was successful.
I agree, Matt. And listen, the reason why I wanted to bring this up, I understand how fans feel about Kit. You and I have talked about it a great deal. I personally think at some point Kit needs to be replaced by someone that can take us to that next level, okay? Talking about this match isn't really about that. That's big picture. But if we're talking about this match, if we're going to criticize Kit when we think he's made mistakes, I have to give him praise, Matt, when I think he's done the right thing. And I think moving Kaká is a significant move. Like I mentioned, the quotes from halftime also show me that he did talk to the players at halftime, and I think that had some effect. So am I wrong to give Kit some credit for this victory? Because some fans have been saying that Fulham got this victory in spite of Kit. I don't agree with that. I actually think Kit affected this match.
Well, I think he did. I think that he got something across to the players that was received well and kind of echoed and things like that. I don't think that he just sat back and let the players win the game. I think that, you know, he obviously made the move. I mean, it made the move for with Kaká and LVC switching. I mean, I find it hard to believe that they would just do that naturally and the manager would just allow that to happen, because that would be kind of undermining his
right.
his authority. And so obviously he did it. And so you've got to give him I think the people that want to say that we won in spite of him, I think are the ones that just want Kit gone and kind of are blinded by all of that. Now, I'm one that says, you know, if you're going to criticize, then you have to praise as well. You can't
exactly.
You can't just play one side of the fence, and you've got to be very objective and see the whole picture and judge it by a case-by-case basis. The problem with me is that it's on a case-by-case basis. It's been so inconsistent, his positive impact on the game, that it just hasn't happened often enough. That's been my whole thing, is that it just hasn't been consistent enough. And so if he can affect the game and affect the team this, you know, this much week by week, then why would we replace him? It's the fact that it's been it's been very inconsistent from week to week in terms of how the team comes out and plays and what their attitude and you know, their style of play is like. And that's, I think, been the most frustrating thing and kind of the biggest red flag.
Listen, for me, Matt, it comes down to consistency. And that is a reflection on Kit. It's also a reflection of the players. You know, you win as a team, you lose as a team, you draw as a team. And I think we have the talent to be a top six team. And for Kit, you know, he has to harness that talent and put us in the right positions to succeed. I've been critical of him. I'm still going to be critical of him when he makes moves that I disagree with, and doesn't make moves that I think he should make. But again, if he does things right, Matt, I have to give him praise. I have to call it both ways here. And I think Kit had a hand in this match, and I think we should give him praise. That's just my opinion. Sounds like you're on the same page with me on that. All right, Matt, we actually have some questions from the Fulham supporters. I'm gonna share them with you and get your thoughts on it. I put this on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. We have three, so we have some topics, and I'll start with Yavor Alexiev. I have one. Did you see anything in the Reading game that could change the plan, assuming the plan is to sack Kit?
Unfortunately, and you and I have talked about this off-air in the past, is probably the frustrating thing is that when he gets under pressure, he always seems to have some result that loosens the pressure. And then he'll be good for a month and everything will be fine and everything will start to go downhill, and then he'll get pressure on him again and then he'll get a good result. And so it's a vicious kind of cycle that we're in. I still have not changed my mind in my opinion on this. And I don't think a lot of people have. I think that the rumor was going around on Twitter was that he was sacked at halftime, which is why he didn't show any emotion, after the third goal or after all three goals, the first three goals that we scored. Obviously, that was just a rumor and was false, but, I still don't think the plan has changed. I still think, watch this space. If we don't, if we don't perform well against Bristol City this weekend, I still think he's massively under pressure. I still think it's a week by week thing, and hopefully if it is a week by week thing, hopefully that kind of keeps the fire underneath him to keep the intensity going in order to get results. So, in terms of, maybe changing the way we play, maybe I don't think you can sit O'Hara though. I still think he's been our best player all year.
Oh, totally.
If he can play in that kind of system and things like that, then I think that we could see a change in the way we play. But the biggest thing that I've seen in terms of change of plan or whatever you want to call it is the change of the way we're defending in that game. And like I said, is the center backs really pressing high and really pressing and not disengaging and not allowing them space to be able to serve balls in and defending wide spaces a little bit more effectively. So if you're looking for different changes of the way we might play, then that would be one to watch to see if that's something we can change more consistently. In terms of changing the plan in order, in terms of sacking Kit, I still don't think that's off the table.
Listen, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. You know, I think it's going to happen at some point. You know, but it's actually a good situation right now for Fulham because, again, it's probably the pressure on him is probably going to force him to be even more precise of what he does and force him to possibly make changes, possibly think outside of the box a little bit. So, again, pressure can be a good thing. So, again, let's see how it all plays out. But I agree with you, Matt. I think at some point we're going to see a change. It's just, you know, we're just going to have to see how it all plays out. But in the meantime, I wish Kit the best of luck. I want to see him keep getting the team set up to win, you know, set up to win these matches. And then, you know, again, if he keeps winning, he's going to stay in his job. If it starts going the other way, I have a feeling we're going to have a change. But in the meantime, I'm certainly hoping that he sets us up to win each and every match. Before we move on, that you know, it's funny. I have a question for you because, again, we were talking about the center back. You were just mentioning the center backs. And the pairing of Stearman and Ream, how is that different from, say, Stearman and Byrne that you've noticed?
Well, I think you have a more true center back pairing in Ream and Stearman in that they're very different players. One offers kind of the blue-collar, hard worker, winning balls in the air, very intense, very, you know, physically gifted and very physically strong and things like that. I think Ream is more a little bit more of a, you know, is a ball winner with his feet, but they can also keep the ball and can build an attack out of him. I think when you have Byrne and Stearman in, it is two traditional English center backs. I think that it's a little bit of a throwback to the old school of they're going to win balls in the air, hopefully be very physical. Byrne was a lot more physical when he played a couple weeks ago. You know, and so it was a lot more of your more traditional kind of English football center back pairing, whereas I think what Stearman and Ream bring is a little bit more of the new age, you know, kind of the new era of center back pairing where one likes to get the ball down and play and can really build out of the back and can you know, can be very precise with his passes and you know, can keep possession. It can be an outlet in terms of switching the point of attack to come backwards and things like that. And the other one is kind of the, you know, you don't want to make it as an, this is not an insult, but it's Stearman's more of the kind of the hard worker, you know, kind of bruiser kind of person because he can still play the game as well. So I don't want to make it.
Sure.
I don't want to take anything away from his game. But in that pairing, he's more of that player. So it is two very different pairings in that you have two pretty prototypical English center backs, good in the air, decent in the tackle, things like that. And then you also have Ream who can step in and be that different kind of center back who can settle the ball down, find passes, and still be a very effective defender.
So let me ask you, because it sounds like what you're describing, this goes back to what we talked about in prior shows. Stearman and Ream seem to complement each other because they're different, whereas Byrne and Stearman are similar, like you said, traditional English center backs. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But for me, Matt, I think this gives Kit options to how he wants to play his center back pairing, maybe even, you know, again, let me ask you, is it crazy to think that he could change it from week to week, or does he need to settle on two because you want that consistency from match to match? You know, again, is this an issue, or is this a good problem to have?
I think it's a good problem to have at the end of the day. I think there's definitely an argument to be made either way, to be honest with you. I think that depending on coaching philosophy, you could go game to game and say, hey, this team has two big strong forwards and they like to play balls up, you know, straight up the field and they're very direct. We're going to play Byrne and Stearman in this game and to take care of that. And then games where a little bit more like Reading where they like to get the ball down and play, maybe you play Ream and things like that. But, I am more of the philosophy of I like to have consistency because I think that the more you can play with a player in match situations, the more that
right.
You know their tendencies and you can read them. So now that's just my philosophy personally, but I think there's definitely an argument to be made either way. But what it definitely does give you is it gives you options to where, you know, if we're up, you know, if we're up 1-0 and all they're doing is banging a ball forward and they have a, you know, they're bringing in somebody, you know, a 6'7", you know, center forward or whatever, and you know, all they're doing is banging the ball forward for the last 10 minutes, then yeah, maybe you can bring in Byrne and you know, be able to kind of lock down the back in that way. So you know, I think it definitely gives you options to be able to change the game mid-game, and to be able to kind of lock down the back if you need to. So
no, I like that analysis. Also, I like the thought of, you know, again, matchups, you know, matching up against a certain opponent, maybe Byrne fits better than Ream. And I like that flexibility, but I also see where you're going on to have that consistency build up over time. So it'll be interesting to see how this all fleshes out. I have a feeling that it's going to be Ream and Stearman, but I, you know, again, nothing against Dan Byrne. I think he's played well. So again, he's fighting for a job as well. I like all this competition. There's competition all over the pitch, which is truly a wonderful thing. You want the competition, and that's what we're seeing because players want to play. And I think overall that's going to help Fulham as we go on further into the season. All right, Matt, we do have a couple more questions, actually from our friend Anthea Evans in New Zealand. Let's start with this one. What influence do you think Scott Parker had on the Reading game? According to tweets, he was talking to players in the huddle before the second half started. What are your thoughts of this? Again, I saw a bunch of tweets about this. I didn't see it when I watched the broadcast. Did you see Scott Parker talking to the players? I personally didn't see it.
I didn't. And obviously, when you watch the 90 minutes online, they kind of cut right to the kickoff, so you do kind of miss the walkout and things like that. But, no, I had read that too, and it's great to see from really your club captain. I know that Ross is kind of the on-field captain and things like that, but Scott is definitely our club captain in my mind still, and I think he's very, very well respected there as a professional and you know, and as a Fulham player. So you know, I thought that it was very important. I think that him getting back engaged, because you know, he hasn't played a whole lot, and so you know, what you worry about is you know, not necessarily from him, because he's just a good professional, but from just a player in general, is are they getting less and less connected with the team because they're not on the field as much? But he's still clearly very much engaged and very much invested into what we're doing, which is very good to see. And I think it means a lot for a player like that, you know, who honestly, he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to do that. And
no, he's a leader.
To do that, I think.
Right, yeah,
no, right. I mean, he's our leader, and I think that shows the other players that, you know, I may not be playing, but I'm still very much invested, and it should mean you're the ones that actually can affect the game. So it should mean
right.
more to you than it should to me. But right now, you know, I think that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, listen, he's totally invested in Fulham Football Club. It's good to know how much he cares. And again, I wouldn't be shocked if he's part of the coaching staff after he's done playing. I want to see that. I always wanted Danny Murphy to be part of the Fulham coaching staff. I still do. You know, again, I want those types of players involved in Fulham day to day. I do. I want leaders. Danny Murphy's a leader, and so is Scott Parker. All right. Here's one other question. This is an interesting one also from Anthea. Also, do you think having non-coaching staff in the dressing room would inspire players or be a distraction? I don't think Kit is an inspirational manager, but he could use others to inspire players, i.e. the All Blacks preparation by bringing in VC award Appiata, if I'm saying that correctly, and I'm sorry if I'm not saying that correctly, Anthea. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, in terms of match day, if you've ever taken the cottage tour, I think it would be a distraction to bring somebody in outside the coaching staff, because that room is tiny. It's about as big as a normal bathroom in a house, in an American house. So I'm not sure that'd be the best idea on game day. But you know, in terms of coming in and working with players, either their mentality or giving pep talks or however you want to put it, throughout the course of the week, can be very, very effective, because it comes from another voice. I think there's times during the course of a season with how much time these players spend with each other and spend with the coaching staff, that at times it's very, very important for them to hear the same message come from a different voice. And you know, I think the more different people they can hear the same message from, it starts to kind of go, oh, okay, it's not just him that's saying that. You know, it makes a little bit more sense now. And maybe, you know, somebody can say the same thing that Kit is saying, but just slightly different in a different verbiage, and it may make sense or make a little bit more of an impact with an individual player. So I think it can be very effective. But on game day, I honestly think from a professional standpoint, on game day, I think it's a little bit too late. I think you would probably use that more in the build up to the match than just on game day.
See, I totally agree with that. And when she wrote that, I was thinking right off the bat here. Again, I'm a fan of the New England Patriots, and Bill Belichick uses inspirational people all the time. I'm thinking of Jim Brown right off the top of my head. Would come in during the week to talk to the team. Former players would come in to talk to the team. She actually used Danny Murphy as an example as well. I think that can be very inspirational and helpful. Not on match day, but in training, I think, again, I think it can be helpful. You know, it's funny because Belichick has even used like inspirational movies. He's used all of those things, and I think that they're helpful. You know, I think it just gets your mentality, that confidence. You know, hey, we can do this. You know, and if you get inspirational people around you, I personally think it can be a huge help. All right, Matt, we only have a little over 3 minutes left. Listen, this has been a tremendous show doing this with you. I say this every week. I really enjoy doing this with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, I really appreciate it. And like I said, it's great to do one after such a win like this. And, hopefully we'll have more shows like this and fewer shows like we have in weeks past.
Please. I would so much rather do shows like this. Again, that means that we're winning and we're moving up the table. That's what I would rather do. All right, Matt, like I said, we only have a few minutes left. Any final thoughts?
No, I just hope that we can keep it going and really take all the positives from this and really take lessons learned and moved on. Now, you're not just the players taking the lessons learned, but also Kit. And, we can move forward positively and get a big 3 points against Bristol City this week. That would be huge for us to get 2 in a row and to really kind of inch our way up the table.
Okay, very good. We only have about two minutes and 30 seconds left. I do have one quick question for you. We're going to be talking about it in the preview show. What do you make of the struggles in midweek for Fulham? What do you think is the cause of that? Real quick, for about a minute.
Well, I still think it's a slight lack of fitness, to be honest with you. I think that we've seen that late in games at times during the season, and I think that happens kind of midweek in order to be able to kind of recover fast enough in order to be effective. And so hopefully that won't that won't affect us too much. I think because coming up, obviously you have more midweek games in the championship, so you've got to be prepared to deal with that. And hopefully we will over the course of the season learn how to stem that tide.
Okay, very good. So you think it's a fitness issue, which it could be. All right, very good. Well, that's going to do it for the 11th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ.
Boys and girls.